Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots Monday Morning, where we react to the Sunday morning news shows we watch so that you don't have to. I'm Katie Halper.
I'm Aaron Maté. Good morning, morning, everybody. Thanks for being here with us. Please drop a like if you are here watching live or watching it later on. Why not?
Yeah, either like way, it. Yeah. Like it. Love it. Also, and become subscribers to the channel.
And where can they do that? Where can they do that?
Oh, at YouTube, you press subscribe. Sorry, two things. Subscribe to the channel, press subscribe, and then click the bell so you don't miss any streams. But also subscribe to our show in general at usefulidiotspodcast.com. And that way you get access to extended interviews and bonus content, including every single gosh darn week. We bring you Thursday Throwdown, your midweek dose of media madness, where we kind of do this, but for midweek, not Sunday morning news shows. We do it for other news shows.
It's like our content on Monday, but it's on Thursday. It's a crazy concept. It's an insane concept.
It really is.
You won't believe it. It's going to blow your mind. Well, speaking of blowing your mind, watch what we do today as we play shorthanded, because we're missing our staple, our rock, which is Meet the Press. It wasn't on yesterday. It was preempted for soccer, I think. So we're missing Meet the Press, but that doesn't mean we're short on insightful, enlightening, entertaining, thrilling Sunday morning talk show content, because there's so much to get to. Starting, I guess, this week with Martha Raddatz of This Week, who got an exclusive interview with Chef Jose Andres of World Central Kitchen. That's the aid group that Israel partnered with. And they said, you know what? Let's go ahead and bomb you too. Like, we bomb everybody in Gaza. Right. Let's go ahead and bomb and kill 7 Western aid workers. So here's Martha Raddatz speaking about her interview with Chef Jose Andres.
Today marks 6 months of war in Gaza, 6 months since the horror of October 7th and the deadly terror attack on Israel that killed more than 1,200 Israelis, with more than 100 hostages still believed to be held by Hamas. It's also been 6 months of Israel's devastating response, causing widespread destruction across Gaza and taking the lives of more than 33,000 Palestinians, according to the...
You know, maybe I'm parsing too much here, but notice how she says Hamas killed Israelis on October 7th. Israel took the lives of tens of thousands.
Taking the lives, yeah. Very, very interesting word choice there.
There's such a hesitancy to assign Israel any agency in corporate media when it kills people.
Right.
You know, we've seen that with the New York Times and their laughable passive headlines where people in Gaza just happen to die for mysterious reasons. We don't know what killed them and who killed them. Similar thing here.
Yeah.
Hamas kills, Israel takes lives.
Yeah. It's not even Israel taking lives. It's their response.
Their response take. Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly.
The Hamas run health ministry and leaving the territory.
Oh, okay. There, of course, she has to give us the numbers, right? She has to say that the numbers of Palestinians whose lives were taken come from the Hamas run health ministry, even though, as you pointed out in the past, Aaron, these numbers are depended on and trusted by the State Department, usually.
Yeah, and they're also an undercount. Everyone knows that. Right. Everyone knows they're way too conservative. Do we really want to believe that just whatever it is now, 33,000, 32,000 people have died in 6 months of Israel indiscriminately bombing this concentration camp with massive 2,000 pound weapons, bombs, especially when some people are lying dead under the rubble because there's no rescue equipment to get them.
No
and
fuel.
The infrastructure is destroyed, so counting is impossible. So, of course, even the official toll from the Hamas-run health ministry is an undercount. It's too conservative.
Yeah. Disgusting.
What the UN has called the brink of famine. But it was the loss of 7 aid workers this week that seemed to galvanize a new level of outrage. These 7 individuals.
Because we're racist, because we normalize the killing of tens of thousands of people, half of them children. But when you kill white people, that galvanizes a new level of outrage.
Right.
You know, and of course, it's obviously outrageous what Israel did to these poor workers who are just there to try to feed people because Israel's starving them. But what Israel did before that was also outrageous. It's just, you know, finally, when you kill white people, that crosses the line.
Right.
From around the world, including one dual American-Canadian citizen working with the relief group World Central Kitchen, killed by repeated drone strikes of their clearly marked convoy, despite the group having coordinated their location and movements with the IDF. World Central Kitchen was founded by renowned chef turned philanthropist Jose Andres, his organization providing meals around the globe in the most dire circumstances, from the aftermath of natural disasters like earthquakes and hurricanes to war zones from Ukraine to Gaza, where World Central Kitchen has served millions of meals to Palestinians. That work now paused after the attack that Israel admits was a grave mistake. So I
note how she says Israel admits it's a grave mistake, acting as if they're being brave and truth-telling and making a real admission here that it was a mistake. Obviously, they're going to say it's a mistake. The question is whether they admit it was intentional.
Exactly right. Exactly. She is lowering the bar deliberately for them, basically trying to get them off the hook, because she also mentions there that as a result of this mistaken strike, World Central Kitchen has suspended its food deliveries into Gaza, right, which is exactly what Israel wants to do, because Israel's vowed to starve the people of Gaza. They said early on that no food would be allowed in.
Right.
And so that raises the question that this was not a mistake, that this was deliberate.
And they were clearly marked. The vehicle was clearly marked. They struck on three vehicles. They hit one. Then the people went out of the vehicle, went into the other one. They hit that one. Then they went out of that vehicle. They hit, went to the third one, and then they hit the third one. It was clearly marked. They had coordinated it with them. But notice how tricky it, dishonest and propagandistic it is for her to say they admitted it was a mistake. Like Israel has admitted it, as if they're being, again, like they should get credit for saying that it was a mistake. What other option would they have? The real thing that they'd admit is that it was on purpose. Like there's nothing, you know what I mean? Like there's nothing commendable about saying it was a mistake. What else would they say?
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Disgusting.
Okay, let's turn to what Jose Andres has to say to ABC News, because he's not accepting so far the Israeli explanation.
The initial report released Friday calling the drone strikes a grave mistake that should not have happened. Satisfied with that report?
Well, I want to thank, obviously, the IDF for doing such a quick investigation. But at the same time, I will say something so complicated, the investigation should be much more deeper. And I will say that the perpetrator cannot be investigating himself. But I will say we need more information. We need to see better quality videos. We need to be saying what was the conversations, the radio conversations between the different officers and soldiers in charge of saying that those cars were a target because they were an imminent threat. Those weapons can only be used with very sophisticated drones. And we all know that those drones have high capabilities day and night with cameras that can see in very powerful way what's going on.
So thanking the IDF, but at the same time, to his credit, acknowledging that they shouldn't be investigating, and also that there's tons of evidence that could indicate exactly what happened. But, you know, Jose Andres doesn't have the best record on when it comes to Israel, and it's good that he's calling them out on certain things. But just so people get a sense of where he is, he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, and this is the way he's framing what happened. Excuse me. We know Israelis. Israelis in their heart of hearts know that food is not a weapon of war. Israel is better than the way this war is being waged. It is better than blocking food and medicine to civilians. It is better than killing aid workers who had coordinated their movements with the Israeli Defense Forces. Is it really? Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Jose. I mean, this is not true. Israel's not better than that. Everything he says there about Israel is false. They do use weapon. They do use food as a weapon of war. They've blockaded the Gaza Strip for more than a decade, deliberately keeping out food, deliberately putting Palestinians on a diet. There is a famous quote from Dov Weisglass, who's a former top advisor to then Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, who helped impose the blockade. He said, we're going to put people of Gaza on a diet where they're even counting the calories that the people of Gaza would need to consume every day without triggering a full-blown starvation crisis. So let's feed them just enough so that we can avoid having basically a full-blown starvation crisis, but nothing more than that. So yes, there's a long history of Israel using food as a weapon. And the workers who were killed are heroes, obviously. And they should be mourned, and they do deserve attention.
Right.
But it also should be pointed out that his group does have a curious record in Gaza. There's an article about this at the Electronic Intifada by Ali Abu Naima, who points out that World Central Kitchen's been used by Israel to further its agenda of undermining UNRWA, which is the right. UN agency for Palestinian refugees, the main aid agency working inside Gaza.
And unreminding it. Sorry. They're unreminding it.
Yes. Yes. And so Israel's so sadistic and so determined to actually use food as a weapon of war, that they're even willing to kill people who collaborate with it. Right. Because that's their ultimate, that's the highest goal, is basically making people of Gaza starve. So it just shows how barbaric this government is. They're even willing to target people who are otherwise serving their agenda by actually giving a much smaller amount of food to Gaza than UNRWA could do. But even for Israel, that's too much. Right. Because they're that sadistic.
And they do want to, as you're pointing out, they want to control how food gets in or out. So they want to shut down UNRWA. And as we've talked about in the show, it's despicable what they did. They falsely accused, without presenting any evidence, except probably torture, confessions via torture. They said that UNRWA participants took part in October 7th. They said it was, I believe it was 0.002% of UNRWA's employees had taken part in this. Of course, a much higher percentage of the IDF has committed war crimes that have been documented. And because of that claim, the U.S. and other countries stopped funding UNRWA. Now, other countries had the decency of refunding, starting to fund UNRWA again after they saw that there was no evidence, but not the United States.
Yeah, they were basically shamed in. It was such a joke that they were shamed into it. It was just, they, I guess, felt a sense of shame that they were cutting off a lifeline for Palestinians while providing weapons that are killing them. And there was no evidence for any of Israel's claims. So they had to back down. But of course, yes, as you mentioned, the Biden administration is standing strong. And even the Senate recently passed a measure that would cement the U.S. defunding of UNRWA, make it permanent. And by the way, many senators, including Chris Van Hollen, who called out the government's lies about UNRWA, they voted for that bill. So that's where we're at. We're going to hear from Chris Van Hollen shortly. But let's turn to fan favorite, East Philly's fan favorite, John Kirby. You know that he's on the case. He's getting accountability. Yeah. He's going to make sure that Israel pays a price for killing Western aid workers.
I want to show you a timeline, Admiral Kirby, and wonder why things might change this time. November 6th, death toll in Gaza passes 10,000. November 10th, Secretary Blinken, far too many Palestinians have been killed.
And by the way, of course, as you pointed out earlier in the show, the language death toll passes, right? It's not Israel kills. Israel has killed.
Exactly right. And then Blinken's line, far too many Palestinians have been killed,
right,
which means for him, there's an acceptable level of Palestinian right. death. But Israel has surpassed it, which of course is not even true, because that was in November and Israel's kept killing Palestinians and Blinken's policy hasn't changed one bit. But even the language, imagine Blinken saying far too many Israelis have been killed.
Right. Far too many Israelis were killed on October 7th.
Yeah. 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 There's an acceptable level of Israelis being killed and Hamas passed it. So therefore Hamas, but you know, had they just, you know, it's the bigotry is just everywhere.
Yeah.
December 12th, Biden says Israel is losing support to indiscriminate bombing.
Yeah, that was a classic when Biden blurted out that he knows that Israel's carrying out indiscriminate bombing, right, which is a war crime. And of course, he did that in a private moment that was like he was speaking to, I think it was at a fundraiser where he has a lot of these things.
At another fundraiser,
a few years ago, he said that the world is closer to Armageddon than it has been since the Cuban Missile Crisis. And he said this privately, but it leaked out. So like all of a sudden the world hears the news that in private, the president, the most powerful person in the world, nominally admitted that we're closer to Armageddon than we have been in decades. And, you know, of course, his policy of fueling the proxy war in Ukraine did not change one bit.
Maybe he was just bragging, actually, Aaron.
No, maybe. He might have been. And then anyway, so now he says, oh, yeah, Israel's carrying out indiscriminate bombing. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Right. Which means he's complicit in it, in war crimes. And it also violates the Leahy Act.
100%. 100%.
Which says you can't fund people engaged in human rights abuses. He also said in a private fundraiser before he was elected that nothing would fundamentally change. So he is a real truth teller.
He certainly
with his
is.
Presidency, nothing would fundamentally change. Yeah.
You know, I never do this, Katie. I never do this, but I caught this stray comment. So I'm going to respond to a stray comment, like a stray bullet. CJ says, LOL, he's not the most powerful person in the world. CJ, that's why I included the qualifier nominally.
He did.
Check the tape. Check the tape.
Check the videotape.
Yeah. So LOL to you, CJ.
Yeah.
Because the word nominally was used.
Boom.
Okay. All right. Let's keep going.
December 22nd, death toll in Gaza passes 20,000. February 8th, President Biden calls a response in Gaza over the top. February 29th, death toll in Gaza passes.
That was a classic because when Biden publicly, not privately, called Israel's response, quote unquote, to October 7th, over the top, that was like his most searing criticism of Israel to date. When he said it was over the top, like mass murder, genocide is over the top. And then we're supposed to take that as like a sign that Biden is now he's cracking down on Israel because he's finally, after months, coming out and saying that slaughtering tens of thousands of people, including thousands of children, is over the top. That's the most he could say publicly.
Using a totally casual colloquialism, yeah.
Over the top.
OTT.
30,000. March 2nd, Vice President Harris said there must be an immediate ceasefire for at least the next 6 weeks.
That was a classic when Kamala in Alabama said, there must be an immediate ceasefire, pause. And everyone's God. Yeah. Oh, she's finally doing it. And then 10 seconds later, for at least the next 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Classic.
So
classic
awful. Fire.
April 1st, IDF strike kills 7 World Central Kitchen aid workers. So why do you think anything will change?
I'm glad you brought that timeline up because it shows the growing degree of frustration that we've had with the way these operations are being prosecuted and the way that the Israelis are acting on the ground in terms of civilian casualties. So we have been increasingly frustrated. And again, that was a core message that the president delivered to Prime Minister Netanyahu in their phone call this past week.
He's proud of being presented with a timeline of disingenuous statements over the last 6 months in which tens of thousands of people are being slaughtered with U.S. weapons deliberately. And he says this is an example of how we've been increasingly frustrated for 6 months, as if it's not actually a timeline of the Biden administration doing a song and dance to pretend as if they have concerns while really doing nothing to stop the carnage that they're fueling. He thinks that he wants us to believe that that makes the Biden administration look good or something.
Right. Because they've been registering frustration and not doing anything about it.
Yeah, we're increasingly frustrated.
Yeah, it's a frustration timeline. He should give a frustration graph.
Yeah. Like, you know, God forbid a year from now, that would be, you know, a year and a half of increased frustration as tens of thousands of more people are slaughtered and the Gaza Strip is, you know, I mean, so much of it has already been reduced to rubble. What is he talking about?
So gross.
If they've got to do more, they've got to make changes. Now, the prime minister assured the president that he would do that. We've seen some announcements in those early hours. That's welcome. We got to see more. We've got to see it over time.
I want to.
He's been saying that for 6 months.
Exactly. What's changing? What's going to change? I mean, to be fair, it's like, well, there is a slight difference in that people are upset about white people being killed.
That's the only difference. Yes, yes, yes. And you'll notice that basically, so after those aid workers were killed, Biden called Netanyahu. He didn't even say he would cut off weapons, but he sort of hinted that I might do something differently. And that wasn't that mild use of U.S. leverage was enough to get Israel to stop blocking many aid crossings and to let them in. And so therefore, more trucks apparently got into Gaza after that than have been allowed in since October 7th, which shows two things. One, that Israel's been deliberately blocking these aid convoys.
Which they've denied.
Which they've denied. And that even the hint of U.S. leverage being used can achieve results. So imagine if Biden actually used that leverage to stop the mass murder.
Right, which he could.
Tens of thousands of people would still be alive.
Yeah, I know. I love it. Somehow, magically, Israel opens crossings that they claim they never closed.
Exactly right.
How does that work?
Yeah. Okay, more John Kirby.
Sorry, guys.
More than any.
But the president's own national security memorandum stipulates, as you know, that there can't be an impediment to delivery of aid. So is negligence, gross negligence, failure to communicate, failure to follow through to protect these aid workers a violation? Is there any accountability?
Certainly those things are not acceptable. And again, that was the tenor and the tone of the conversation that the president had with the prime minister. They had
Freudian slip. He couldn't keep track of which one is the president of which country.
And who he works for. He actually works for the prime minister.
Right. Yes.
Have taken some measures of accountability here in the immediate wake of the World Central Kitchen.
Two
were fired. We're going to be looking to see. Well, first of all, we're going through the investigation ourselves right now. We want to reserve judgment until we've had a chance to look at their findings. And we certainly expect, and this is an important point, that the announcements the Israelis have made, while welcome and important, can't be the end of it. Mm-hmm. We've got to see sustained changes in the way they're operating on the ground and the way they are allowing humanitarian assistance to get in unmolested.
And as you know, the Israeli government says that had nothing to do with the president's calls. They had already planned to take some of these measures.
The president specifically asked for the measures that we saw them announce that later that evening and in the coming day or so.
We'll see if they follow through. The former defense secretary, who you know well, Leon Panetta, said on CNN, in the past, in my experience, the Israelis usually fire and then ask questions. Is the Biden administration position still that there should be zero conditions on aid? Military aid to Israel?
I'm not going to get ahead of the president or decisions he might or might not make going forward. He was very clear in his call with the prime minister that if we don't see some changes in their policies in Gaza and the way they're prosecuting operations, we're going to have to make some changes of our own.
You do think these are Israeli policies then to block aid?
They get to decide how they prosecute this war. It's their operation.
While saying that they're committing too many crimes, or he won't use that language, but too many civilians are dying, it's also up to them how to do it. So they're okay with them doing it that way? Which is it, John?
Yeah, exactly. He's just been asked, hey, is it Israeli policy to block aid? And notice how he doesn't say no.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Which, if you're arming Israel and they're blocking aid, then you can't arm them.
Right,
so he can't admit they're doing it. So he can't admit they're doing it. So therefore, he can't answer the question.
Right.
Which is, so the non-denial is a confirmation. He knows Israel's blocking aid, but he still wants to arm them. So therefore, he can't answer the question.
Right. Poor guy.
We just talked about them pulling troops out and what that means. They get to decide how they prosecute operations. We get to decide how.
Sorry, John Kirby. You know, there's a difference between pulling out troops and blocking aid to starve the people of Gaza. There's a big difference. Like, these aren't just like two tactical things. Like, yeah, you know, like one tactic is to withdraw troops. Another one is to block food and medicine. Like, no,
those
aren't like practical steps. One is a war crime. The other is not. But he's acknowledging there that actually, from the Israeli point of view, everything is a tactic, including war crimes. So he's confirming it. He's confirming that he's arming a government that is deliberately blocking aid to the people of Gaza.
Disgusting.
By the way, I also really want to hear him say, and I'm Casey Kasem.
Yeah.
Because he sounds a lot like Casey Kasem, for people who don't know. Casey Kasem is a famous radio host. He does have the look
Lebanese-American, actually.
That's right. He was. Yeah. He was. I'm sorry, Lebanese-Americans, to associate you tangentially with John Kirby, but I don't know. That's who he reminds me of. Hmm. Except Casey Kasem was a much better person, I'm sure. And
yes.
Had way better music taste. Was not pro-genocide, as far as I know.
With Jim Zogby.
No way.
Jesse Jackson? I'll have to get back to you. Don't quote me.
Well, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Great company. It's true.
Yeah.
How we're going to react to that and how we're going to administer our own policy with respect to Gaza. We make those decisions. And the president was clear with the prime minister. If there's not changes, if things don't get better, then we're going to have to make changes of our own.
So the president.
So basically, all these claims from the start that were pressuring Israel to do better, he's acknowledging now that all those were meaningless, because now for the first time, he's saying that Biden has actually threatened to do something. For the first time.
Right.
6 months in, tens of thousands of dead. And now it's only not that we're going to cut aid, but it's like he's suggesting we might do that. We're going to think about it. But again, that was enough. Even the hint of that was enough to compel Israel to stop blocking aid trucks.
Right.
Is considering withholding, conditioning, doing anything here? Because for 6 months now, we have been hearing complaints like this. Humanitarians on this program telling us what's happening.
Look, again, we see it ourselves. We're not blind to the risk that the aid workers are in. Certainly not blind to the suffering that the people of Gaza are going through. And the president, again, was clear. I won't get ahead of him, Margaret. I won't prejudge decisions he will or won't make.
Why haven't we heard from him on this? If he feels so strongly, why isn't the president out there talking about this?
You saw his statement after
the Prime Minister's call
with the Prime Minister, and he will continue to talk to the American people and the members of Congress about what we're doing and what we're not doing.
It is of direct national security concern, is it not, that as the Director of National Intelligence says, there is a generational impact from what is happening on the ground there.
No question.
That there could be an impact terror recruitment long term here.
No question. I mean,
so what is the U.S. policy other than wait and see?
It's not wait and see. I have to take issue with that. That is not the policy at all. Two things can be true at once.
It is wait and see. He just said, we're going to see what the results are of Israel's investigation into its killing of World Central workers. And also, we're going to see if Israel changes behavior. And then we'll consider maybe doing something that he won't even specify. See, it's wait and see.
And it's even wait and see on Biden. We're going to see what he says. I'm not going to get ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
You can still be a friend of Israel and make sure that they have what they need to defend themselves. And they do need things. I mean, we're talking about the war in Gaza, rightly so, completely understand that. But they're under threat. They live in a tough neighborhood. They're under threat from Iran and Iran-backed groups all around. They still have a need to.
They love this talking point. Oh, yeah. Israel's in a tough neighborhood.
Tough neighborhood, yeah.
We have to defend them. You know, even they're an occupying power committing mass murder, but they're in a tough neighborhood, which is like they're trying to play on this racist tropes about, you know, just like European settler countries surrounded by angry locals, angry natives. It's Israel that has stolen territory from multiple countries, from Syria, from Jordan, from Egypt, launched an aggressive war in Lebanon that killed tens of thousands of people in 1982. And recently bombed an Iranian consulate in Damascus, killing a Iran Revolutionary Guard Corps commander and setting off possibly a new escalation. I mean, we haven't seen Iran retaliate yet, but who knows what they'll do. And they bomb Syria routinely. There have been hundreds of Israeli strikes inside Syria going back years. And actually, Israel coordinates those strikes with the U.S. So this idea that we have to help Israel defend itself against all these, you know, adversaries is just, it's complete projection, because it's Israel and the U.S. that are threatening the security of everybody around them.
Right. Also, someone put this in the comments, and it's very true. He did say last week during a press conference, or during, you know, one of his talks that he gives, that the State Department had determined that Israel had not committed any war crimes or international crimes since October 7th.
Yeah. Well, that's because they've done as thorough an investigation as Israel has. So nothing to see here.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
All right. A little more of this man. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Defend themselves. How they do that matters.
Yeah.
How they conduct these operations matters. And that's what we're talking to them about. And we need to see some changes in the how, or we'll have to make some changes in our support.
Is there a time?
How they commit mass murder matters.
Right.
And how we support their mass murder matters too. And that's why we're slightly changing our talking points from the last 6 months. And now we're saying for the first time, we might do something about it, even though we're not.
timeline for when they need to act by? Because
we're looking right now. I mean, again, they made some announcements in the few hours after the call. They made some other announcements in the next day about opening up crossings. All that's welcome. But we're going to be watching this very, very closely. It has to be sustained and it has to be verifiable.
John Kirby, thank you very much for coming. Disgusting.
Okay, well, that's enough, John Kirby. We can skip to the next clip after him, which is a different point of view. Avril Benoit of Doctors Without Borders, which has been trying to document Israeli atrocities. This is what she had to say.
Your organization's asking for an investigation into the deaths of your workers. Why hasn't there been a response?
Well, there hasn't been a response because what we have seen time and again for the last 6 months is that Israel is conducting this war in a way that completely disregards the need to protect civilians at all costs. I mean, there are norms of war, the Geneva Conventions, international humanitarian law, and we see systematically that this is disrespected. So we would expect an answer on that, but just on the question of the famine and acute malnutrition, it's a medical condition at this point. It's a slow motion massacre of people to subject them to the kind of deprivation of food and water that they have been subjected to for the last 6 months. It requires a medical response, massive influx, not just of food, of trucks, of flour, of lentils, but of medicines and of trained personnel who know how to bring a child who is in complete organ failure back to health after suffering this kind of malnutrition.
So that's just a very stark contrast with all the misdirection we get from John Kirby. She calls it a slow motion massacre.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. It's, I don't know, the fact that John Kirby can still go out there and say every week, you know, we're talking to Israel, we're frustrated, he can do this song and dance, that does represent a failure of the U.S. media. Because if he was really questioned by, you know, across the board by journalists doing their jobs, he wouldn't be able to go out there and just keep doing this stuff. He'd have to hide.
Right. He wouldn't be. So, yeah.
The fact he's still out there is it's I don't know, it's yet another example of the media failure here, that they've allowed this to happen. Because even calling it a slow motion massacre is being generous to Israel. I think it's a high tech genocide.
Yeah, and Margaret is probably the most, Margaret Brennan is the most aggressive that you'll get.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, let's also hear from Cindy McCain. She's the head of the World Food Program.
Secretary Blinken praised the move by Netanyahu to open Eretz Crossing, but he said, quote, the real test is results. When do you expect your trucks will be able to move through the Eretz Crossing? Have you seen any tangible evidence yet on the ground that more aid is going to get in?
Well, there are certainly meetings that have been had, and I'm aware of some of them, and I know that there's plenty more going on right now. Please remember this, though, and so our viewers understand, WFP stands ready. We have right now amassed outside on the border food for 1.1 million people for 3 months. We just need to get it in. That's why these crossings are so important, and more crossings are needed, as you know.
You've been sounding the alarm about this crisis, especially in northern Gaza, for months now. Why do you think there has been such a holdup getting the aid into Gaza? Is it because of security concerns that weapons might be smuggled in? Is it punitive because the October 7th attacks were so horrific? The hostages still remain in Gaza. What is the reason for the blockade as it's been?
Okay, so that's a great question. That's such a telling question from Jake Tapper. Okay, he's trying to find a way. How can I justify Israel using aid as a weapon of war? So is it because Israel has these security concerns, so they can't let in medicine and food because there might be weapons smuggled inside, I don't know, like milk bottles or something.
Right.
Or B, is Israel just so mad and upset about October 7th that they have to use collective punishment? Like,
Right. When it says punitive, exactly.
When it says punitive, so you mean collective punishment, which is a war crime.
War crime, yeah.
Like,
give us a sense of why they're doing this. Is this a war crime that they're committing?
Like, he's basically trying to justify collective punishment.
Right.
He's saying, because, like, you know, punitive means collective punishment, and you don't, no matter how mad you are about an atrocity committed against you, you don't get to punish babies as a result and force an entire population to starve. And
maybe you do, according to Jake.
Yeah. So basically, Jake Tapper's spectrum, is it legitimate security concerns? Because there might be guns inside of, food packages.
Anesthesia.
Yeah, anesthesia, exactly. Or is it justified collective punishment? That's Jake Tapper's choice there. Like, it's not what Israel officials have actually said, which is that we're going to punish the entire people of Gaza.
Right.
They're all animals. They, you know,
human animals, no food, no electricity, nothing.
They're not different than Hamas.
Right.
He won't take Israeli officials at their word.
Right. They're no civilians, as the president, Isaac Herzog, said.
Exactly.
Well, from our experience, we've just had difficulties getting through the checkpoints. The Israeli, when the Israelis take a look at the trucks and x-ray them, that's done in a very efficient and effective manner. It's just once we get in, and many times, either the right foot's not talking to the left foot, or, you know, it just depends. And of course, you've seen the examples of when we were looted very heavily. People are desperate, and you and I both know you would do anything to feed your children. So we have to remember this is an insane thing that's going on, and it's something that we as humanitarians must be able to get in with our humanitarian principles and deliver aid in such a way.
Well, it's a very milquetoast answer. She's obfuscating that Israel's open fire on people desperate to get aid. She mentioned
kind of relevant information.
Yeah, like there's been multiple flower massacres now.
Right.
And so she's also declining to assign agency to the Israeli mass murderers who are firing on her aid workers and the people trying to collect aid. And I'm sure Jake Tapper is very happy with that. And Cindy McCain, by the way, of course, is the widow of the late John McCain. So. Yeah. It's not too surprising to hear such an answer from her. Okay, we can move on to Chris Van Hollen.
Oh, yeah, great guy.
He's been critical of the Biden administration, critical of Israel. He said the Biden administration was lying about the so-called intelligence linking UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, to October 7th. But yet, he still recently voted to defund UNRWA anyway. So here he is.
So are congressional Democrats comfortable with approving some of the weapons systems that are being asked for and maybe in the pipeline, things that won't be delivered for years because Israel does live in a tough neighborhood? Should they be able to get fighter jets and things like that that they're asking for?
Yes.
There's Margaret accepting John Kirby's talking point.
Framing,
about, Israel being in a tough neighborhood.
Tough neighborhood.
Israel's nuclear weapons. Okay. Nobody else around her has nuclear weapons. Nobody else around Israel has committed anywhere near the atrocities Israel has. Israel's, you know, we mentioned it before. They invaded Lebanon. They stole the Golan Heights from Syria. They stole the occupied West Bank and Gaza. They stole the Sinai from Egypt and finally gave that back so they could actually go about and proceed with taking over the West Bank and Gaza and also invading Lebanon. The one time Israel's returned land to Arab states that it took from, it did that so they could steal more land elsewhere. So that's Israel's record in this so-called tough neighborhood.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Again, I said, like, Margaret is the toughest you'll get on these corporate news shows, and the toughest you get is someone who still quotes a John Kirby talking point.
When they comply with the terms of NSM-20 and when they meet President Biden's requests. This partnership cannot be a one-way street. So my view is the president needs to do what he said he was going to do, which is see if the Netanyahu government is going to implement these changes in terms of allowing more humanitarian assistances. And we should measure that by people not starving to death, people being able to get medical equipment, kids not being able to not having amputations without anesthesia. So we have a long way to go. And until those conditions are met, then no, we should not be sending more offensive weapons to Israel, not to stop them permanently, but to effectively use our levers. That's what we're asking the President of the United States to do.
So we want to go back to funding them. We just want them to not starve people.
Yeah. And he wants to, like, what does he think this government's going to do with those weapons in the future? Like,
right.
He thinks they're not going to commit mass murder again and slaughter people indiscriminately. But yet he is the best we can do in the U.S. political spectrum. He is like, that's the most critical we can get. But also when it's come time to vote, he hasn't voted once against funding Israel.
It's all talk.
Record. Yes. Senator Von Hollow, one could say.
Ooh, nice. I like that. Yeah. I hope you run into him on a train. That'd be a real zinger.
You think I'd have the guts to call him Senator Van Hollow to his face?
Yeah, I think so.
I can do that. Yeah. I can pull that off. You're on notice, Senator Van Hollow, if I see you on Amtrak.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it's harder to call, someone a name to their face. I try to.
Yeah, it is. That. It is. Yeah. But you could ask him if to walk the walk instead of just talking to talk.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. I could. Okay. Well, thank you, Senator Van Hollow. Let's turn to Congressmember French Hill, a Republican, staunch supporter of Israel and the Ukraine proxy war, because they go hand in hand. They're both neocon projects. So why not? Here he is speaking to Margaret Brennan.
But you want to, as I understand it, make some changes, including attaching a provision that would allow for the U.S. to seize Russian sovereign assets and use them in the future to rebuild Ukraine. Any tweaks you make, doesn't that slow down the pathway for this to actually pass through the Senate and get...
Any tweaks you make, doesn't that slow the time it will take to pass billions of dollars for the Ukraine proxy war?
Yeah, I'll be funding you.
I'll be funding you. Oh, man. That's, by the way, that really is like the top question right now when it comes to corporate TV, talking about Biden's request for $61 billion more for the Ukraine wars. When is it going to happen, and can we speed it up? It's taking too long. That's the top question. Not should we be pouring tens of billions of dollars of more money into a futile and catastrophic proxy war. It's when's it going to happen? How long will it take? And basically, the reason why there's now this debate on Capitol Hill, Biden wants the money now. Republicans are saying, yeah, we'll give you the money, but we want you to also promise to steal more Russian money to help pay for it. Basically showing the world that, like, if you have a policy we don't like, we're just going to steal your money, which will not do very good things for, like, the U.S. reputation and U.S. and, like, the U.S. run financial system. Not that it is running swimmingly anyway, but and also they want to do things like have Biden promise to export more liquefied natural gas.
Right.
So that's what Republicans are trying to do. Not saying, like, you know, let's have peace talks. Let's end this war. It's just, can we get something for it, for giving you more money? That's our debate right now on Capitol Hill.
It's unbelievable.
It's the Ukrainians who say they are running out of time.
Oh, and also, Lindsey Graham wants to give it to Ukraine in terms of a loan. So, like, we're using your country to bleed Russia. You're sacrificing all your soldiers. Here's the money for that, but you got to pay us back with interest. That's Lindsey Graham's help for Ukraine right now. And I think Trump supports that too.
Well, the Repo Act that you're referencing, where we use Russian sovereign assets that are held in Western European or U.S. financial institutions, some $300 billion, would go a long way to filling the Ukrainian budget gap and be a good down payment for reconstruction to make Putin pay the ultimate cost of his illegal invasion of Ukraine. It had a strong vote in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, 20-2, a strong vote in the House Foreign Affairs Committee, 40-2. These are good votes, and I think this provision would strengthen the package in the floor. I believe it has support in both the House and Senate. And it would be, in my judgment, a way to get more support for the total package for Ukraine, seizing these Russian assets. And there's support in Europe for this. Prime Minister Sunak is supportive of this strategy, and others in Europe.
But you want?
Yes, but there are some in Europe who don't want this because it means that basically you're legitimating this tactic that, like, hey, if your government does something that the U.S. doesn't like, we're going to steal your money from our banks, which will make countries not very keen on putting their money in Western banks. But these people on Capitol Hill are so determined to continue this proxy war and to not pay for it so that they're trying to find other ways to do it rather than just admitting that this thing has been a disaster.
Right. And letting negotiations happen, which is the thing that would have actually saved Ukrainians' lives.
Yeah. And that have been blocked so many times, as we've covered tirelessly, but you never hear about on the corporate news shows.
Yeah. Well, we have another Republican that we get to hear from, Rep. Mike Turner of Ohio, Representative Mike Turner. Let's hear what he has to say about Russian propaganda.
Ukraine. Let's turn to Ukraine, an issue that's important to you and your fellow Republican chairman, Michael McCaul, who runs the Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman McCaul made a comment this week about what he says sounds like Russian propaganda from some conservative media and why it's so difficult to explain to Republican voters why supporting Ukraine is important. He told Julia Yaffe, quote, "I think Russian propaganda has made its way into the United States, unfortunately, and it's infected a good chunk of my party's base." He singled out primetime shows on conservative.
What he means by that is that the majority of Republicans don't support funneling tens of billions of dollars more into this proxy war. And might even support diplomacy, which if you're a neocon warmonger, all that is just Russian propaganda. You can't possibly fathom why people might not want to spend their tax dollars on a catastrophic proxy war against a geopolitical rival. Because people like Michael McCaul and Jake Tapper have an obsession with weakening and undermining any deterrent to U.S. hegemony, whether it's Russia, Iran, doesn't matter. If they're a deterrent to U.S. power and control of the world, they have to be destroyed. That's all they can see. And therefore, any amount of money from the U.S. is expendable, as are Ukrainian lives.
Right.
Channels. Do you agree with him? And how big is this problem?
Oh, it is absolutely true. We see directly coming from Russia attempts to mask communications that are anti-Ukraine and pro-Russia messages, some of which we even hear being uttered on the House floor. I mean, there are members of Congress today who still incorrectly say that this conflict between Russia and Ukraine is over NATO, which, of course, it is not. Vladimir Putin having made it very clear, both publicly and to his own population, that his view is that this is a conflict of a much broader claim of Russia.
Do you want to know who said that this is a conflict over NATO? NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
Yeah, exactly.
He said that Russia went to war to keep NATO from its borders.
Right.
Now, I agree. It's not just about NATO. It's also about this internal conflict that Ukraine has seen since 2014, when the U.S. backed a coup that overthrew an elected government. And you had people in eastern Ukraine who identify with Russia and who supported that ousted President Yanukovych. They rose up with Russia's help. And rather than end that war via the Minsk Accords, which were signed, the U.S. and their allies, Ukrainian ultranationalists, have kept the war going. So that's also a factor, too. But Jens Stoltenberg himself has admitted, the head of NATO, that Russia went to war to prevent NATO on its borders.
Right. And this whole talking point about Putin saying it's about Ukraine and all of Ukraine comes from absolutely nowhere, and it's never questioned.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, like, Putin said that, you know, he's always said that Ukraine and Russia are historically tied and that they're brotherly countries. And yes, I mean, Putin has a habit now of sort of downplaying Ukrainian nationalism. But he's also said that he would respect Ukrainian sovereignty if they respected the rights of Russophile Ukrainians and not do things like try to ban the Russian language, because that was one of the things that helped set off the war after the 2014 coup, which is that the new coup government, dominated by ultranationalists, their first real measure was to try to basically ban the Russian language, make it no longer possible to be an official second language in Ukrainian regions. So they're trying to wipe out Russian culture. And so Putin said the key to, from Russia's point of view, to protecting Ukrainian sovereignty is to respect the rights of Russians instead of Ukraine. And Ukrainian ultranationalists, backed by people like Mike Turner, have refused to do that. And of course, anyone who says anything against all that has to be repeating Russian propaganda. That's what Jake Tapper and Mike Turner agree on, including members of, he's like throwing members of his own party under the bus. He's saying that they're all dupes of Russian propaganda.
To Eastern Europe, and including claiming all of Ukraine territory as Russia's. Now, to the extent...
Putin never said that all of Ukrainian territory is Russia's. He said that, there are parts of Ukraine that historically have been part of the Russian political sphere. There's a long history there, but he's never said that all of Ukraine is Russia's. Other Russians have said that, but not Putin.
Right. I was getting ahead of myself when I said that he had never said anything about that. That's the quote I was referring to.
It makes it more difficult for us to really see this as an authoritarian versus democracy battle, which is what it is. President Xi of China, Vladimir Putin himself, have identified it as such. We need to stand up for democracy.
Oh, yes. I love that moment when Xi and Putin joined hands and said, hey, everyone, this is a battle of authoritarianism against
and democracy. Yeah, that was great.
It's a direct quote. Count it. Put it in the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, they just make stuff up constantly. Like, he says Putin has said all of Ukraine is Russia's. He says that Putin and Xi said this is about autocracy versus democracy. That was Joe Biden's line. Like,
right.
He's taking Joe Biden's line and now, like, claiming that Putin and Xi said it. Nikki Haley said that Putin has vowed to go on to other countries after Ukraine, which also is a lie. They just make stuff up constantly.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that he mentions authoritarianism, because let's finish this. And then the next quote dovetails nicely with this.
We need to make certain that we know that authoritarian regimes never stop when they start an aggression. Ukraine needs our help and assistance now. And this is a very critical time for the U.S. Congress to step up and provide that aid.
All right. Well, let's take a look at another clip featuring Mike Turner. And this one is, again, with Jake Tapper. And let's hear what he has to say about Section 7-2 of FISA.
Are you going to vote for this latest version of the FISA bill? And do you think it will have the votes to pass?
Absolutely. You know, the Intelligence Committee was instrumental in drafting the bill that's going to the House floor. And Jake, I appreciate you raising this issue, because this is surveillance of foreigners who are abroad. We're not surveilling foreigners in the United States. We're not surveilling Americans in the United States. Those individuals who say that this is a warrantless search of Americans' data are just not telling the truth. These are foreigners abroad. They're a select group of individuals who are a national security threat. If you're an American and you're corresponding with ISIS, yes, if we're spying on ISIS, your communications are going to be captured. You would want us to do that. All Americans would want us to try to make certain that we keep ourselves safe from these outside terrorist groups and organizations. We are not spying on Americans. This is not a warrantless surveillance program. This is foreigners who are abroad only, and this needs to pass.
And do you think it has the votes? It will?
I think it does. I think it will. I think that those who mischaracterize this are small compared to those who understand that this goes to the heart of our ability to get intelligence that allows us to be able to keep Americans safe. This is not a warrantless surveillance of Americans.
So that's a nice talking point, but it actually is that, because as he said, they can justify it and claim that they're doing it only to foreigners. But if a foreigner talks to an American, they're able to then collect all the private phone calls and emails and texts of that American and look through it. And they, according to the Brennan Center for Justice, there have been more than 200,000 of these warrantless backdoor searches for Americans' private communications every year. Sounds a little authoritarian to me.
That sounds a little authoritarian, definitely.
Spying on U.S. citizens?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
While gaslighting people into thinking this is only affecting foreigners.
Okay. Let's keep it moving with my old friend. We mentioned
your Amtrak buddy.
My exchange with him on a train a few months ago. Chris Coons, the senator, close ally of Biden. Let's hear what he's saying about the latest in Gaza.
Of a hostage release as a condition for any ceasefire.
So I just want to remind our viewers of the sentiment of protesters. This is from a few months ago. There were a lot of student protesters. We continue to see them all the time against the U.S. policy in support of Israel. Watch this.
You have a whole generation of voters coming up who are going to be able to vote in this next election. And if you don't stop this genocide now, you will not get these votes.
So we saw hundreds of thousands of vote uncommitted against, essentially, President Biden. We've heard for quite a while about the tensions that exist within the White House. The president initially said he was rock solid in support of Israel's efforts here. Have the protesters won at the White House?
Fox News thinks this is a gotcha question to the Democratic senator. Have the people who oppose genocide and mass murdering children, have they won, sir? Are you listening to them now?
Yeah. Are you responding to them?
Yeah. Have the people who hate mass murder, have they won? Say it ain't so.
Say it ain't so, yeah. By the way, I'm sorry to stop this, but someone just pointed out in the comments, 3,401 liking, watching, but only 1.4 likes. Guys, this is bad. Let's get it up. Wilson, what do we have right now? I'm not afraid to do it this late in the show.
I see 1.4K as well.
Get it up to at least 1.5, guys. What are you doing? This is not even half. Where are we up now?
Still seeing it. Maybe the people who are hate watching, maybe they have won.
Yeah, we can't let them win like the protesters.
1.6K. They didn't win.
All right. Thank you. We won.
Democracy saved.
Democracy saved. Thank you.
You know, this segment is also called Hate Watch Watch because we're watching the hate watchers.
You're right.
You know, we have our eye on you, hate watchers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was another segment of Hate Watch Watch.
Hate Watch Watch. HWW. Yeah.
Also rolls off the tongue.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's hear Chris Coons assure Martha Raddatz. No, sorry, Martha McCollum. I think that's her name. That no. The anti-genocide people have not won. Don't worry.
Don't get your panties up in a bunch. Yeah.
No, let me remind you what just happened. 2 weeks ago, President Biden signed into law our annual appropriations bill that includes $3.8 billion in support for Israel. I think this is a tactical disagreement that began with Prime Minister Netanyahu insisting he would go into Rafah. Let me remind you, in Rafah, there's more than 1 million Palestinian civilians who have fled from the north and the center of Gaza. They are now trapped up against the hard border with Egypt. And what I have been saying, and what I believe President Biden has been saying directly to Prime Minister Netanyahu, is before you go in at scale and try to finish the job against Hamas, make sure that you allow for humanitarian aid and for those civilians trapped in Rafah to move out of the way before you conduct this last stage of the ground campaign. That's
what a humanitarian, Chris.
What a humanitarian. Wow. To have a tactical difference with them. This is just a tactical difference, not a war crime.
Before you slaughter more people and destroy more homes and hospitals, make sure you let a little bit more aid in and allow some people to flee. It's a, you know, like not stop your mass murderer campaign and end your occupation and siege of Gaza and the West Bank. It's make sure you let a little bit more food in before you finish out your genocidal extermination campaign. That's the moderate Democratic position right now.
Yeah.
But I understand the disagreement to be about.
I want to ask you a quick question about Ukraine. But first I want to ask you this. What do you say to those who say that this move is going to be music to the ears for Hamas and for Iran, and that their ultimate goal of eradicating Israel from the Middle East, if they see the United States pressuring Israel to pull back, will be exactly what they want?
Well,
okay, so if Israel doesn't commit mass murder, then somehow that advances Iran and Hamas's goal of eradicating Israel. So for Israel to exist, it has to just keep exterminating people. That's what I'm hearing there. It's so crazy. And by the way, I mean, you know, there's so many false assumptions in these questions, but both Iran, in the past, Iran and Hamas have essentially accepted the two-state solution. They said they would accept a two-state solution on the 1967 borders. It's Israel that doesn't accept its own internationally recognized borders and wants to take over as much land as it wants. And so Hamas resists that. So this idea that they're trying to like wipe out Israel, especially when Israel is the one that has nuclear weapons it's all just so delusional and misplaced, and it's all an act of projection. It's Israel trying to wipe out anybody who stands in the way of its hegemony. Yeah. Okay. Should we hear more from Chris Coons, or is that enough of him?
I don't know. Should we let him finish his thought?
Okay.
Just
okay,
since he is your Amtrak buddy.
Sure.
Well, let's move on to the supplemental, which helps answer that question. The Senate, controlled by Democrats, passed with a big bipartisan margin a supplemental that President Biden requested that includes aid for Ukraine, humanitarian aid, and $14 billion in additional support for Israel. It's been waiting for action by the House for weeks now, and it's my hope that Speaker Johnson will put it on the floor this week. It will show Iran strong bipartisan determination to continue to support Israel in the face of Iran's threats if that supplemental passes the House this week.
All right.
Somehow it's Iran
that's
threatening Israel.
Israel just bombed Iran's consulate in Damascus. Israel regularly carries out terror operations inside of Iran, assassinating nuclear scientists. There's a U.S. siege of Iran with sanctions that have been impactful. So, you know, but yet, according to these people, it's Iran that's threatening. Right.
That's the threat.
You know, Iran is surrounded by U.S. military bases.
They're in a bad neighborhood.
Yes, they are. Because the neighborhood happens to include is both Israel and the United States, even though the U.S. is, you know, actually so many thousands of miles away.
Right.
The U.S. puts itself in Iran's neighborhood and therefore threatens Iran. Okay, we have time for one more clip. So let's do Senator Tim Kaine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who
sounds like someone who would be a guest on our show on this.
Yeah,
this
we'll listen segment. To this clip. He suggests here something that is a very real possibility, which is that Israel, having just massacred aid workers, might even be a threat to U.S. troops.
Even this U.S. military operation, these are some troops that are deployed out of Virginia, Fort Eustis in Virginia, in charge of this Marine Pier operation. We knew when we announced that they might be in harm's way from Hamas. But, you know, after the events of this week, anybody doing humanitarian aid is going to wonder if they're in harm's way from the IDF.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's saying there that, you know, Biden's stunt of trying to pretend as if he wants to get aid into Gaza by building this new pier off of Gaza, which will take months, that might threaten U.S. troops, because Tim Kaine now doesn't trust Israel to not kill U.S. troops as they just killed Western aid workers. So even a sitting U.S. senator is admitting that Israel is so crazy that it could kill U.S. soldiers. But will that prompt really a change in policy? Well, not so far. Not that we've seen so far.
Really disgusting. Really disgusting possibility, and surprising to hear him say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've come to the end of the show.
Yeah. This was a great show. Great super chats. We thank everyone for their super chats. And I guess we will see you next week, right?
We'll see you this week on Useful Idiots at our
See you this week on Useful Idiots, and we'll see you next week at Monday morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, subscribe at usefulidiotspodcast.com to support the show. Get bonus content, including the Thursday Throwdown, which comes out on Thursday. That's why it's called the Thursday Throwdown.
Exactly.
And thanks so much for being here. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.